A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you. Thank you for your support. Welcome to A Tempo, the Classical Network spotlight on the arts and culture. I'm Rachel Katz, and I'm your host as we explore the changes at work in the performing arts. Each week, I'll bring you some of the latest news and also take time to examine many of the issues that are challenging these arts organizations. Today, we'll head over to Lincoln Center to check out one way that some concert presenters are exploring to silence the annoying noise and distraction of cell phones during performances. Lincoln Center is testing a program that provides audience members with pouches in which they can place their phones to reduce the chance of them distracting concertgoers. My guest will be Leah Johnson, Chief Communications and Marketing Officer at Lincoln Center, and we'll also hear comments from audience members who attended a recent White Light Festival concert. As always, let's start off today's program with a look at some of the news from around the world of the performing arts. More than 70 students at Westminster Choir College have joined in an ongoing suit against Rider University's plans to relocate the Choir College's programs on Rider's Lawrenceville campus. The students represent all grades of the undergraduate program, as well as graduate students. The filing comes as Rider moves ahead with efforts to absorb the Choir College into existing facilities on its main campus, which houses some of its music programs, such as musical theater. Rider agreed to take on Westminster in 1991 when the Choir College was facing its own financial difficulties. 3 years ago, Rider President Gregory Delomo announced plans to sell Westminster's Princeton property and relocate the Choir College programs as a means of alleviating Rider's own budget deficits. The recently filed complaint alleges that Rider's announcements and the uncertainty surrounding the eventual outcome of its plans have harmed the students' academic programs and opportunities and have wasted Westminster resources. Since the initial announcement, enrollment has declined by at least two-thirds, which has forced Westminster to drop its sophomore chorus and shrink some of its other performing ensembles. According to the filing, further declines could put its contracts with orchestras at risk. Opponents of the move have also said relocating Westminster's programs will eliminate the conservatory nature of the school, and that proposed renovations at Rider won't meet enough of the Choir College students' needs, such as sufficient practice rooms, organs, and performance spaces. Rider has said that the move will benefit all students because those not enrolled in the Choir College would have easier access to its ensembles, and that Choir College students could more easily pursue other activities such as sports teams or non-musical dual majors. In a recent email to the Rider community, Provost Donna Jean Ferdine said the transition committees had discussed whether to drop the Westminster Choir College name, but chose to keep it, quote, at this point in the journey, unquote. Under the trust which granted Westminster its Princeton land, and which Rider agreed to uphold when it acquired Westminster, the land would revert to the Princeton Theological Seminary should Westminster no longer be able to fulfill its mission of sacred music instruction. The next court date is tentatively scheduled for November 8th. That's just some of the news this week from around the arts world. We've probably all experienced it. A beautiful, inspiring moment during a concert performance that is totally broken up by or the person next to you or in the row in front of you whose constant texting is distracting you and possibly even blinding you from the screen's light. Even with regular reminders to silence our phones before the performance begins, it can be easy to forget, and even if you put them on silence, there's always the temptation while waiting for the program to begin to check texts, send last-minute emails, or check your Facebook newsfeed, all things that take you away from that moment of being in the concert hall. Some ensembles have embraced the opportunities the technology presents, providing apps that allow the audience to interact with the performance. In 2014, the Philadelphia Orchestra introduced LiveNote, an app that provides information about the composers, the pieces, and other details about the program throughout the course of the concert. Some venues and ensembles have even created special seating sections for those who want to share the concert experience via social media during the concert. However, some concert and performance presenters, from Broadway shows to comedians, have begun banning mobile phones outright or putting other restrictions in place that limit access to phones during a performance. One of the latest venues to explore that is Lincoln Center, which brought in the company Yonder for its White Light Festival to test its approach to reducing these distractions. I attended the second of these concerts this past Tuesday. A program of Mahler Lieder performed by baritone Christian Gerhard and pianist Gerald Huber. When concertgoers arrived, Yonder staffers offered them a special pouch in which they were asked, on a voluntary basis, to place their phones that had been either silenced or shut down. The top flap on the pouches, which were gray with a green trim, were then locked. Yonder staff were on hand in the lobby with round devices that could reopen the pouches during intermission or in the event of an emergency. Some patrons declined the option, saying they had already shut theirs off, while others decided to give it a go. According to Lincoln Center, about 1 in 5 opted to participate. Having slipped my phone into its pouch, I found my seat and settled in before the lights dimmed. I have to admit, it forced me to recognize the extent to which I take access to my cell phone for granted. There were going to be no photos of the program posted to Facebook, tagged with the fact that I was sitting at Lincoln Center, at which point my attention would probably have wandered to posts by other friends. And instead of checking my email one last time, I dove right into the program notes and could therefore really focus on the music when the performance began. I did notice several people playing with their phones right before the performance, and yes, one did ring a few minutes into the concert. During intermission, I stopped to chat with Janet Pascal, who said she didn't feel she needed it because she always shuts her phone off, but she thought it was a good option to reduce the chance of a text or a call ruining the performance for others.
I was actually pleased to notice that my cell phone went off during the first half, because this would be very bad music to have a cell phone go off during.
Have you been to concerts in the past where they were an interruption?
I was at a performance of Tristan Isolde once where a phone went off on the last chord of the Lead Toe. That was unfortunate.
So what do you think about the idea of introducing something like this?
Anything that works, I think it's great.
Now, you said you normally power them down anyway.
I put it on silencer mode, then I put it on airplane mode, and then I turn it off. I don't want my phone to go off. I would die.
After the concert, I spoke with a few more people. Elise Frawley opted out, but she said she had been making her own conscious efforts earlier to keep the phone out of sight, out of mind.
I think it could work for some people, depending on your relationship with your phone. I didn't opt into it because I've been trying to be more self-disciplined, and I think I succeeded tonight. I didn't check my phone. Yeah.
What was that like? I mean, as far as not checking, was it a struggle, or did you have to kind of remind yourself a few times? Or,
I mean, personally, I've been working on this for, like, kind of a couple months, so it felt like, okay, this was a small victory tonight. Yeah, I didn't have any urge to check my phone, but it could be an outlier.
Some patrons didn't quite realize it was voluntary, but said they really didn't mind one way or the other. Paula Moya said she's good about shutting her phone off, and yet she found having it totally out of reach offered her an option to get more into the program.
I thought, first of all, that it was compulsory, so, you know, I immediately do it, but my husband and I, we were saying usually we just don't put it in our purse, we don't take them out during the performance or anything. So I don't know how useful it was in our case. I know that maybe some people like to fiddle with it and play with it during the performance, but, you know, we don't. So I don't know how useful it was for us. But it's interesting.
Did you get a sense that the people around you, that you saw fewer people with phones or texting, or no?
Actually, around us, almost everybody in the front had their phones before the performance. Afterwards, they were all gone, but before the performance, all of the phones were out.
What do you think about this? The idea of this type of program? Is it something that you think could be useful?
I think so, actually. I think we're so used to having the phone that I was even thinking, oh, now I don't have my phone and I cannot Google something about Mahler. But then I realized, okay, whatever I need to know, I'm sure it's written in the brochure. And that's exactly what I did, what we all used to do before these little magical boxes were invented.
Lena Bindra is Yonder's New York lead, and she was on hand along with other staffers to assist patrons and answer questions about the technology. She said Lincoln Center was the first classical venue to work with Yonder. Some of their other clients include pop concert organizers, comedians, and schools that restrict cell phone use by students, but she hoped more would follow. She said the choice to make it voluntary or mandatory lies with the presenting organization.
You know, we're all adults. We all know the right thing. We know the etiquette of answering your phone during a concert, especially something so amazing as this. But it's really up to etiquette. It's concert etiquette. If you choose to do it, the option is there. It's for the person. We'd love if everybody did do it. It gives everybody more of an intimate setting. It gives everybody more of a chance to really pay attention to what's going on, people around them, and really turn to the person next to you and say, how's it going, rather than being on your phone and texting people.
Right.
Yeah.
And so what has the response been like here with these first two programs?
It's been pretty good. The first week people were a little confused, you know, what is this? Why do I have to lock my phone? But I think once people start warming up to it and understanding it, you know, we're here for your good time. We're here so everyone can have a good time and you're not answering a phone or receiving a text during the show, so the person next to you is not enjoying their time either. So it's been pretty good. Yeah, we're excited.
And how would a classical music performance perhaps differ from, you know, say, a comedy show or some others? Are there differences in terms of the need to have something like this?
It's extremely tame compared to a comedy show or a concert. The crowd is very much more into what they're here for, the music, the performance, the arts, rather than the comedy and the music and the dancing. So they're very more in tune with what's going on. That's why I think the Yonder pouches make way more sense.
A few days after the concert, I checked in with Leah Johnson, Lincoln Center's Chief Communications and Marketing Officer. She said they felt the White Light Festival offered a good opportunity to test the idea of limiting mobile device use with this particular technology, as audiences and performers alike adjust to the new world and mindset that mobile devices have introduced.
Three things really came together for us when we were thinking about experimenting with Yonder. The first is that the White Light Festival, which is celebrating its 10th anniversary, really grew out of our artistic director, Jane Moss, really grew out of her observations of the role of the performing arts in allowing us as audience members to really expand our inner lives, right? Music offers really a way into the human experience, so kind of connecting within. So people who come to the White Light Festival have bought into and are looking for that kind of experience. So that was sort of the first thing that we thought about when thinking about experimenting with Yonder. The second thing is this really sort of interesting quote that we found. Our new president, Henry Timms, he started back in May, new president of Lincoln Center, and he found a quote by the first president of Lincoln Center. And at a commencement address that he was delivering, William Schumann, in 1966, he says the following quote, "I begin with one basic overriding premise, that the arts are an antidote to our automated age, that they serve as a creative illumination to counteract the push-button emptiness of our mechanized life, an armor against disillusionment and anxiety of our times, and an added defense against the destructive forces inherent in man." And so those two things, coupled with also the third thing, is really the mounting evidence that there's a link between social media, the intensive use of social media, and depression, certainly in younger people. And so we put all of those in the washing machine and came out with thinking, you know, it would be the festival, the White Light Festival, was the perfect time for us to try Yonder. And the notion of locking away your digital device, right? If it's your watch, if it's your phone, or both, and really sort of being in the moment and experiencing the music, connecting with what's not only on stage, but who's next to you and with yourself, we thought it was a perfect time to try it.
Now, at this point, it's been a voluntary option. Why did you choose to take the voluntary route, and how did you see people responding to that?
Yeah, it was very interesting. You know, we talked a lot about it here, and it was we believe that we are the first sort of classical music performance to use Yonder. And so we had certainly done a lot of reading about how, you know, Dave Chappelle, comedians, and it's being used at, you know, Freestyle Love Supreme, and sort of the rationale behind others enforcing, you know, it's a must, right? You have to lock up your phone when you go to Freestyle Love Supreme on Broadway. So we thought about that, and it seemed to make sense. But we also thought about our audiences, and we thought that we should take a more gradual approach to it and offer it to people, and not mandate it, because it's just something that we haven't done before. We didn't want to put people off. But again, we thought that by offering it, particularly to people coming to a performance during the White Light Festival, where they're sort of inclined for the kind of experience that you know, is really all about connecting, we thought that would be a better way to start. And the first day, now the first performance was in Alice Tully Hall. I actually attended that one, and we had 30 Yonder users. So that's not a lot. So we started out with just 30. And then for the second performance, it was, I think, the one that you went to, we actually had 150 Yonder users. So we learned from the first one, because Yonder, the folks at Yonder, they kind of really stood back, because we were concerned about people being put off. And after seeing what happened and only 30 users, we said to the folks at Yonder, you know, you can, you know, don't hesitate to go to someone and ask them if they'd like to engage and use the option. And so we ended it with 150. So we think we'll grow in use. And some people actually, interestingly enough, some said that they said, oh, we don't need that. You know, I turn off my phone all the time. We don't need that. So it was a kind of interesting experiment.
Yeah, well, in speaking with people, that's certainly one of the responses I heard. You know, I don't need it, I do it. Or actually, I also heard from people who said, well, I do it anyway, so I figured why not participate? As you look ahead to the third performance, are you looking at other ways to make it even more visible? For example, I did hear from a few people who either didn't realize it was voluntary or just really didn't know much about it. Are you considering doing a little more signage or some other type of way to just really put it in front of people that there is something to pay attention to?
Yeah, we are actually thinking about that, and we've been having a lot of internal discussions and also discussions with Yonder about the best way forward. Certainly, and we are truly taking the position that we don't, you know, if people want to do it, we certainly want them to be educated. We've done, you know, we've sent out a press release. A couple of reporters mentioned it, the fact that we were using it in articles. We are really thinking about that one-to-one connection when people enter the hall. So Yonder, as I said before, they were a little bit more, you know, engaging with people. And we're talking to them about the third time, which will be Thursday, November 7th, to really stop at Mater, to really sort of, you know, reach even a bit more. So nothing, you know, obviously we still want it to be voluntary, but still through the conversations with people as they enter, we think that that's the way to sort of, you know, build the knowledge base so that people will want to, will sort of say, hey, why don't I give it a try?
I know I heard from a few people, and actually one of the things that hit me as well as I was sitting there, and I guess it was at the beginning of intermission, before the performance started, and I was looking at the Yonder bag, and that was actually the first time I realized it was absolutely locked. And I think there are a few people who didn't quite know what to do with it during intermission. So are there thoughts about making the process a little more transparent along those lines, so people know where exactly they can go to get them open?
Yes, definitely. I mean, you know, part of this is a journey of really discovering how people respond and what we can do better. So that's definitely a part of something we'll incorporate into the next go round and sort of helping people to understand that their phone is in fact locked away and they will not be able to access it. And of course, if there's an emergency of some kind, you know, people can sort of go back out to the lobby and get reconnected, I guess. But we are thinking about ways to help people to understand what Yonder does and what it doesn't do. And the other thing that we've had kind of funny discussions about here in internally, you know, some of us here are old enough to remember when we didn't have a cell phone, right? Or a watch that was connected to our phone. And we thought, well, what did we do back in the days if we had kids and, you know, and they were home with a grandparent or, you know, a caregiver? What did we do? We just sat during the performance and we found out later, you know, what was happening. So we're really thinking about all of, you know, all of these things, and it is a tough proposition for people to let go of their phones, you know, but sort of easing people into it is something, and you know, and all we need is, you know, whatever performance that you go to. I was at a performance at the New York Philharmonic a couple of months ago, and I just remember there was an Amber Alert that clearly went off, and at first I heard it, I said, what is this? Is this part of the music? You know, is this part of the performance? And no, it was, you know, phones were not turned off. So it is something that we're hoping will catch on with people, and hopefully they will see fit to sort of join our campaign for connection.
Well, that's actually an interesting point, because initially when I saw the release and, you know, in speaking with people, a lot of the first assumption is, oh, well, it's great because, you know, we hate it when phones go off during a performance. But you've also raised the other issue, and I personally found it to be true that when I was sitting there in the seat before the performance started, yeah, the phone, I couldn't play with the phone, or even, you know, there were no pictures, no selfies of me in Lincoln Center, or no picture, but it made me realize how dependent I am on my phone. Have you started to hear back from people about that part of the experience?
Yes, and actually some of us have actually done it ourselves, you know, so we are, and just talking amongst our team here and just thinking about that feeling of that moment when you realize that you cannot, you know, what is the thing that we all do when we first sit down, right? We either look at our texts, messages, because we know we're going to have to turn the phone off, right? Or we make a last minute phone call, or we start taking selfies, right? Or we want some kind of remembrance. Or at the end of the performance, right, when people are taking bows, the phones come out, right? We naturally bring the phones out because we want to take a picture of it, right? And so we're really thinking about, it's such habit, and how do we break from that, and we really notice it, you know? And one of the things that was so interesting, the first night for me was Jordi Savall. It was just an amazing Journey to the East. It was an amazing concert, and he brings together so many international musicians. And at the end, after, you know, many, you know, standing ovations and so forth, and he spoke. And before the encore, he spoke and said, he said something that was, to me, it just resonated. He said, you know, beauty is for everyone. He said that the performing arts, it's really about beauty. And he said, beauty is for everyone, not just us. You know, he was speaking to the sort of international nature of what he was putting together and the music that he performs. And I thought, you know, if I were busy, if I had been busy taking that or recording that moment, right, I probably wouldn't have connected to the words as much. And so we're really thinking about all of the aspects, right? And then he went on to, you know, in the whole, you know, the they did an encore. But we're really thinking about every single aspect of this. And it is tough to break the habit. And as we know, evidence has shown us that it's really, you know, it's addicting, right? The phone and sort of the, you know, and the blue light and the, you know, and the way that, that ads come at us and so forth. So it's almost a withdrawal process that's pretty interesting to watch.
What are your thoughts at this point of where you might want to take it beyond that?
Well, you know, we are thinking about that and thinking about what are the other, because, you know, we at Lincoln Center for the Performing Arts, we have 8 different festivals, and we are thinking particularly this summer, we are thinking much more broadly about the role of the performing arts in our society, and we are, it's not, you know, we are thinking truly about this coming summer and the fact that we're going to be in a very heated presidential election, right, time. So we would imagine that rhetoric will be pretty high, and we're really thinking about the role that we as Lincoln Center can play in providing somewhat of an oasis for people, right? Where do you go to, it's not even an escape, but where do you go to just kind of experience something and connect with something that is that is, you know, good for the soul. So we're giving a lot of thought to, you know, even beyond Yonder. So certainly we will think about when and how to use Yonder going forward at different festivals. But we're also thinking about more broadly about just, you know, the role that we play in performing arts to help people to connect to other people who are not like them, you know, not like themselves, and just what role can we play here at Lincoln Center? And the summer is kind of a perfect time for that because we have this, you know, this tremendous plaza. We have, you know, so many different things going on in our campus. You know, so we're just thinking of what we can do in that realm. We were really excited to use it. We're a little, you know, a little tentative initially to use Yonder, but I think that it is something that I would like to see, and we would like to see if other classical performances actually begin to take it up. It'll be fun because, you know, Broadway has been out there using it. Certainly, comedians have been using it. You know, some other performing artists. So we're looking to see if others follow our lead.
That was Leah Johnson, Chief Communications and Marketing Officer at Lincoln Center. My final conversation the evening of the performance was with Tzipora Miriam Halperin. She said she usually makes a point to shut her phone off, but she knows what it's like when you forget.
There was one time that I was in a tiny theater and I realized I had not turned off my phone, and I was like, while it was going on, it was like a two-person play in a tiny space. And it was like trying to get my phone. Oh, it was a day there was an Amber Alert thing going on. I normally turn my phone silent, but the Amber Alert thing, I hadn't turned it off. And I was like, I've got to turn it off. And I couldn't manage it. And then the alert came. It was so mortifying.
Lincoln Center will continue its test of Yonder for the 2 remaining White Light Festival classical concerts, a performance by the 16 and Britten Sinfonia of 2 works by Scottish composer Sir James McMillan on Thursday, November 7th, and the Orchestra of the Age of Enlightenment's performance of Pergolesi's Stabat Mater and Vivaldi's Gloria on Thursday, November 21st. More information is available at lincolncenter.org/white-light-festival. I hope you enjoy these conversations that I bring you each week on A Tempo that focus on the changing dynamics and challenges in the arts world. But remember that programs like this are made possible only through your support of this station. To become a member of the Classical Network, go to wwfm.org and click on Donate. Thank you for supporting the Classical Network. Thank you for listening to A Tempo. I'm your host and producer, Rachel Katz. Join me again next week as we explore more issues and trends in the world of the performing arts. A Tempo is a production of the Classical Network and is made possible by the support of listeners like you.